Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by Thomas Dove. Tom is one of the co-founders and CEO at Fraser Dove International, a global search firm and talent consultancy in life sciences. Tom started his career in the early 2000s in a large corporate multinational environment, which was an excellent place to learn the fundamentals. He then transitioned to a global executive search firm, helping scale a business to build 10 offices throughout Europe, the Americas, and Asia, before starting his own entrepreneurial journey in 2013 with Fraser Dove International. They have scaled Fraser Dove with no outside investment to 45 employees and 4 offices around the world, 2 in the UK, 1 in Switzerland, and 1 in the US. I'm really excited to hear Tom's journey and learn as much as we can from him. Tom, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the kind introduction.
And you were referred by Joe Curtis, who's been on the show before. How do you know Joe?
Yeah, Joe and I, actually, great guy. We worked together in the same head office of Michael Page back in the early 2000s.
Fantastic. All right. And so for those who want to listen to Joe's episode, it was called How to Scale Your Recruitment Business While Becoming the Employer of Choice. And that his theme was all about building a company that people want to join. So I always like to ask people, Tom, like, how did you get into recruiting in the first place?
Good question. I actually got into recruitment. I actually chose it. I had a few kind of alumni and friends that were working for some big multinationals. I actually left university and did a Wolf of Wall Street style AIM stock job in London, which was pretty intense and potentially slightly illegal. I didn't realize this at the time. So chose to exit that business. And at that time in London where I was living, there was a lot of my friends that had wandered into recruitment. And actually, it sounded quite an interesting career. It actually sounded like it could be pretty good for the skill set that I had. So, you know, I actually kind of walked towards it and chose it.
Amazing. All right. Yeah, I'd say that's the minority of people. Most people say, oh, I fell into it, or I didn't even know what it was. And I went to register with an agency and they recruited me to work for them, or some story like that. But you actually had friends and you thought, hey, I want to do that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I would say that it was slightly nuanced, because they were already quite successful, these people. So It wasn't maybe the reality of what recruitment starts like or feels like at the beginning.
Yeah,
it's like, I want a bit of that action. That looks pretty cool. So I kind of had the blinkers on and went for it, interviewed with a few companies and ended up, yeah, with Michael Page.
All right. Fantastic. That's a great training ground for sure. And I worked for a large independent called Melville Craig. We had about 200 consultants, and they've since been acquired by, my mind's just gone blank. I'm sure it'll come to me in a second. But in any case, my boss, though, was ex-Michael Page. And so I learned a lot from him, especially as far as selling retained search, because we were a contingency firm. Hudson is the company that acquired Melville Craig. So So we were a contingency firm, and Mike Dixon was his name, came along, and he had been pretty good at winning retainers. So that was he was a great mentor for me, and that really opened that was a whole transformation to kind of transition from contingent to doing more retained stuff. I'd love to, like, let's just dive in and talk about Fraser Dove, because you've accomplished so much, and I want to like squeeze the juice out of that experience the journey you're on right now. So you've grown from, 2013, did you say? Yeah. So Just over 10 years, 11 years, you've scaled up and expanded globally. Can you talk me through that journey? Like from the very beginning, what motivated you to start your own firm? And what was it like in the early days, kind of like your first year in business?
Yeah. So what motivated me to start my own firm is, I think, you know, if you're a good consultant, recruiter, exec search person, you know, you've definitely got that entrepreneurial spirit. You're either extremely process driven or extremely entrepreneurial, is how I feel. If you've got a good mix of two, that's where you can really start to develop your career. And I think, you know, I had left Michael Page and worked for two companies both that had leaders that had gone through successful exits of their recruitment companies. So I was obviously attracted to work for leaders that had started businesses, gone on their own entrepreneurial journey, grown organizations, and then successfully sold them or exited them. And I was working for a really innovative leader called Richard Paisley at a company called Proco Global, where, you know, his entrepreneurial diamondism meant that he was able to take a UK business and open up 10 offices across the world. It was really great to be part of that journey. But in that journey, the kind of exit window of that organization, of which I was one of the shareholders and really bought into, just kept kind of getting kicked down the road. And at the same time, I was kind of late 20s, just about to get married, full of optimism and, you know, ambition. And I was actually being headhunted to go to executive search firms to go and start life sciences search arms to their businesses, because it wasn't so big at that point. So as I was like collating the business plan, I would speak to my brother-in-law, Joe Brown, who's now my business partner.
Oh, cool.
And I would kind of trade ideas with him. He's like an accountant from university. He's got executive search experience. And I was like, hey, this is what I'm making. What do you think of these numbers? This is what I'm going to go and present, you know, and I got a couple of offers. And in the background, you know, and Joe will tell a slightly different story, but in the background, Joe was like, hey, I'm really bored of financial services recruitment. I want to get involved in life sciences. Then we just, you know, as all good ideas happen in the pub, we had a couple of drinks. And he was like, look, why don't we do this together? So we started the business with £10,000, laptop, office, website, and we were at the races. So, you know, the kind of fearlessness has always been part of my DNA, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then for Joe to be very much the yin to my yang, you know, he's very much operational, finance, accounting. You know, I'm more kind of out there, visionary, trying to win business and, you know, working on the brand of the organization. So it was a really good match. And then if I talk about the kind of the first year, so, you know, in the December of 2013, we were both in Joe's kitchen trying to design this logo that we've now got, that we're now kind of synonymous with. And I just said, look, this is the plan. I understand this market. I know where the opportunities are. Over the next 5 to 10 years, this is where we could take it. He, you know, believed in the vision. And then from kind of month one, we were in the market. Month three, we were profitable. Month five, we had, you know, 5 or 6 people. We had a Christmas party that year. It was like just nonstop, relentless kind of focus on growth. It had never been a lifestyle business. And then when I look through those next 10 years, I've moved house about 5 times. I've had 3 children along the way. We've got 50 people in the business now. So it's kind of like lots of professional and personal milestones as we've gone. But I've just been kind of like focused on growth.
Wow. Awesome. There's so much to unpack there. So you've literally 10x like in the last 10 years from 5 people in the year one to close to 50 people now. That's phenomenal. And it's interesting that you always intended for it to, you know, for it to grow. And you were, I mean, that's pretty aggressive. Five people within 5 months, your first 5 months in business. So I'd love to learn more about that. But first, can we just take a step back and talk about the dynamic between you and Joe? Because that's so powerful. And I think the reason that many businesses don't scale is that it's rare for one person to have all the skills you need, right? And it sounds like you complement each other well. I've got a similar dynamic with my business partner, Leanne, where you use the term visionary. I don't know if that was intentional, but there's a book or in a system called EOS where they talk about having a visionary and an integrator. And the visionary is the kind of entrepreneurial person and the integrator is the kind of process-driven person. And so is that how you see your kind of partnership with Joe, or how has that played out?
Yeah, it's definitely, we used to call it like, you know, if we have an analogy of like, I've got foot on the accelerator, you know, and Joe's pressing the brake and changing the gears.
Okay.
So that's the kind of way that we're working. But, you know, Rocket Fuel is a great book.
Yeah,
that's the one. That kind of operating system in it.
Yeah.
You know, and it took us a while to actually understand our roles in the business. But to give you kind of visibility of day one, we started the business. I was out there trying to win business from potential customers, clients, And Joe was looking at the systems, but also candidate mapping and engaging on talent for the searches that we were going to win. So it was like winner researcher. We were happy with those roles. And then we were able to win some really good projects early on, hire in some researchers that would then become the new search consultants of the future. And then Joe was able to kind of knit together all of the work that was happening in the background, L&D, whatever it took.
Yes.
Basically, what we're trying to do is unpack each other's jobs so that we weren't doing things that we weren't very good at.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, we still do it to this day, but like we continually unpack what we are doing. So it's almost like, you get a few of these out, you get the
post-it notes,
and you're kind of writing down everything that's taking up your time.
Mm.
Okay, so all of the good stuff that you enjoy and that you're great at and that's making a difference to the growth, you kind of keep hold of. Anything that is slowing you down or that you're not as strong at, then we kind of put that into a different pile. That could become somebody's job.
Mm-hmm.
Or we might distribute it for other people in the business who can then walk into more responsibility that they're going to be better at than I am.
Mm.
So we were able to like refine our roles, and that really helped us grow.
I love this. Let's talk more about it, because so you're calling unpacking your job. I've not heard that terminology before. Is that a Tom Dove original or?
Well, I actually, our former NED, Rob Thesiger, God bless his soul, passed away last year, but he actually kind of came to us with some of this. He was like, guys, let's write down everything that you're doing. Because he actually said to us, it looks as though you need an executive assistant. Like really kind of tactical job. If you got an executive assistant, all of this time would be freed up. Yeah. So you get 30% of your time back each. We're like, okay, cool. And then he said, what would you do with that 30% of time? And then I said, you know, I'd do this, or I'd look at marketing, branding, personal branding. And then from that moment on, we kept going back and refreshing it. When you're getting to the point of you're almost like full up of stuff to do, and you shouldn't really be doing it all, that's the opportunity to say, okay, pause. Let's unpack it. Let's write it all down. Let's refocus. And then that's where we started to create new jobs. We started to create new opportunities or new practices because we were seeing new opportunities in a different way.
Yeah, I love it. How often do you do that, kind of take that step back, review the things you're doing, and then do the post-it note exercise, and then either decide, well, do you know what? I'm going to free up this chunk of time by either delegating or hiring somebody to do those other parts?
Yeah, in the 10 years, I reckon we've done it 15 times.
Okay, wow, interesting. So at least once a year and sometimes twice a year.
Exactly. And then actually what happened was it became twice a year when we were hiring leaders to come and join the business.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're like, we need to define what their role is.
Mm-hmm.
But also I like hiring people with two roles in mind. So I hire them for the position that they want to undertake or that we need them to undertake as they join. But also it's nice to speak to them about 12, 24 months time. Where is your role going to evolve into?
This is interesting. Can you say more about that? Like what's the thought process behind that and how does that translate in practice?
Yeah. Well, the thought process behind it, I would say is, you know, as a scaling bootstrapped company, we have to sell the vision and the mission mm-hmm. and the willingness for people to come and want to work for us, for this brand and with us. But also, you know, I'm not naive enough to think that we're not in competition with other executive search firms that are after this amazing talent. Mm-hmm. So for me, I just always try and think differently, act differently. And, you know, being able to talk to somebody quite articulately about, you know, where your career potentially could go with us in the next 12, 24 months mm-hmm. is quite a unique selling point when we're in the interview process. Because it's like, I want you to come and join this business. We know that you're very good at this, but also throughout the process, you've told us that this is where you want your career to go. So let's try and help facilitate that. It doesn't always happen, market conditions, the change of team, but it's like a North Star for leaders within our business to be able to have more of a vision on what the future might hold.
This is brilliant, Tom. And so, because it sounds like you're, if I'm understanding this correctly, obviously part of it is that you're helping the person to see their career path with Thomas Dove International. Sorry, Fraser Dove, because it's Joe Fraser and Tom Dove. Fraser Dove International. So it helps you to recruit top talent, but it sounds like you're also looking for high potentials who genuinely have the ability to progress. Is that part of your selection criteria? Is you want someone who can not just do this job, but could go on to do bigger things?
I want this business to be the home of emerging talent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it will be part of our next 3 to 5 years to go and hire people with 20 years of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the proximity of where we're located, because of the values and the culture of the business that we've got, and also the history of being able to develop people with limited experience to be A-level players or top-tier players, that works really well for us. So for us to be able to go to somebody with 2 years experience and say, look, within the next 3 years, you could be leading our office in New York. They're like, what? Really? How's that going to happen? You know, I don't have that opportunity where I am. And then we're able to say, well, look at the history of people that have joined us. Come and meet with this person in our London office or this person in Miami. Like, we've got the stories of where it has worked really well. We've also got stories of where it hasn't worked so well. And we're able to look at both parts of history and kind of evaluate the best career path for someone. But, you know, we really want our people to flourish. And as I said, that best emerging talent, that's the kind of strapline that we've got. You know, we really want people to come and feel part of this collective that everybody's going in the right direction and everybody's on that upward track.
Yes. Okay. I want our listeners to really listen intently and take this on board, because if you have ambition to scale a business or grow beyond just yourself, or potentially, you know, be able to come off desk as a biller and be more strategic working on your business, then hiring the right people is, you know, it is absolutely essential to make that work. I've found that often when we're encouraging business owners to grow, they're like, yeah, but I don't have anyone who can step into that role because, you know, there's no one who's ready. There's no one who's, you know, got the potential to accelerate their development that quickly, which, assuming that's accurate and they've not just, there's two things that could be happening here, Tom. One is that they have not hired people who have the potential to grow, right? They've thought, I need a researcher, so I'm going to find someone who's good at that job and is very competent at it, but they're not thinking longer term of what could that person grow into. They've hired someone just for that job. And so I liked what you said, you hire someone for two roles in mind.
Yeah.
Or
that kind of,
yeah, that blink. Now that's fine for today, but how does that help you to get where you want to be three years from now, right? And the flip side of that is sometimes owners do hire people who are high potential and they don't let them progress. So I can think of one guy who I used to coach, who's a business owner, phenomenal, like really huge biller and really successful guy, but he really was the rainmaker. And he had a whole team of researchers who really, like, their progression was, he made them jump through so many hoops and achieve so much just to get from, like, you know, junior resourcer to senior resourcer to, you know, it was like, what? He really he held people back and it ended up costing him, because one of our clients now, who's gone on to build her own search firm and do incredibly well, was in his team, and she had so much potential that he didn't even recognize or allow her to progress. And she just ended up saying, do you know what? I'm going to do this myself. And I think that was a huge loss on his part. So I love your thinking on this, Tom. And I wanted to circle back to the idea of unpacking your job for a second.
Yep.
Before we went to that segue on career progression, because that's the other thing is, business owners who are trying to do everything themselves and keep control of everything. I think control is a big reason people don't grow, is they bottleneck everything. They want to retain control of everything. How have you allowed other people to take over certain aspects of what you originally were responsible for, and ensure that you're setting them up for success, and you're also not trying to hold the reins too tight?
Yeah. The best way of describing this is I am a hands-off control freak.
Okay. What does that mean?
So we have little weird analogies in the business, but I feel that we are almost like a Michelin star restaurant.
Okay.
Everything at the pass that goes to the table has to be of the highest standard.
Okay.
Because that is what our customers are paying for.
Yes.
You're not paying McDonald's money and trying to get a Michelin star meal.
Right.
So I am kind of meticulous in trying to drive that through the business, best practice, all of those kind of things. But also you have to give people space. You have to create the space, because people can do amazing things if you give them the opportunity to do it. Mm-hmm. I have always taken on more responsibility than I should have done from being a kid down my street, walking around with the other kids on my street saying, cool, let's go and wash some cars so we can go and make some money. I'd go and knock on the door. I'd ask for the cash. I'd get the other guys to wash the cars. I'd be on to the next door, knocking on it, trying to get. So that's knew that it
Tom
was part
Sawyer.
Of, yeah, exactly. I knew it was part of my makeup. But, I would say that me taking on lots of responsibility and feeling like that's the thing to do, I hope that I'm inspiring people to do the same, but also I expect to be inspired by them. It's like a real melting pot of ideas and just get into the action. That's kind of what we've created here at Fraser Dove. I'm also very kind of, everybody is just a human with me. It's we're all just here doing stuff. I'm really age agnostic. It's if you've got a 25-year-old that's selling million-dollar deals to private equity firms, good. That's great. Isn't that inspiring that we've been able to do that? Not ever thinking that this person couldn't do it. It's let's kind of push them and see how far we can get them to go.
Amazing. So I want to ask you about the driving, meticulous about the product that's going out to the customer, that it is Michelin star, high standards, and driving that through the business. Can you talk about that? What does that mean, and how does that work, driving those high standards so that you are confident that the meal is Michelin star quality, but without you ever being personally involved in making it, serving it, etc.?
Yeah, it's because I've been in all of the roles in the business.
Okay.
And I can format a resume in our format in 30 seconds. Still, I could still probably do it now. I could spot a spelling mistake on a resume from 30 paces. Or I would be able to, look at the process that we've got a four-stage perfect process, we call it. I'd be able to identify any challenges that we may have in a search process. If somebody's saying that, the candidates are extremely hard to source, I'd be like, okay, cool. So in phase one, have we done the right discovery briefing? Have we asked the right questions? Do we have the search matrix criteria absolutely locked in? It's all of these processes that we've put in place have been created to increase the likelihood of more people having a best practice mindset. So it's not just all stuck in my brain. What I've tried to do throughout the business is create all of this pathway for excellence. So everything has got a blueprint. It's this is how we do things. If you don't, then there are going to be challenges with the process, or there will be challenges with how you try and engage with that client. If you do follow this process, we know what the result could be.
Amazing. So let's talk a bit about that. I like the term pathway for excellence and this blueprint of this is how we do things. How could you talk in more detail about how you drive that through the business so that when you're, because if you've got 50 people, you can't be checking, spell checking every resume that goes out or looking at the wording of the emails that are flying around between clients, candidates, and your team members. So what systems and processes have you got in place to ensure that you don't even need to check because you just know that the email going out is going to represent your brand in the best possible way?
Yeah, it's funny because out of the growth with the business, we've had super low attrition. So okay. We've been able to keep our best people.
Great.
So throughout that journey, we've got people that were here in year one that are still with us now. Mm. We've got people in that kind of years 1 to 5 that are all with us now. So I look at where I sit in the business and I'd say that we've got a good 10 to 12 people that are also best practice orientated. And it's quite funny. You hear things like, oh, well, so Tom or Joe used to say this to me when I would try and do this. So it's kind of from the elders down to the rest of the tribe.
Yes.
There is definitely a buy-in to doing things the right way.
I love that. So look, retaining your best people helps to build the organizational intelligence because that knowledge doesn't leak away, right? You've got that reservoir of talent and knowledge about the best practices and how we do things that then can get passed on to the later generations, even without you having personal, because you said it to that person and that's been then passed on to the next person. So that is powerful. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if anything slips out of process, mm-hmm. if there is a prolonged period of time where we then, see a problem in how we're working as a business or something that needs to be solved, we can then run workshops. We can then run monthly L&D sessions where, you could step back in or I can step back in to explain why the process exists and why it is important for it to exist in a certain way. Also, during those discussions, it's like this was something that was created 5 years ago. It still works now. But how can we improve it? Then you get into that collective think tank with people that are, may only have 6 months experience, but they might come in with some answers that are absolutely brilliant that then can improve that process. Or we say, do you know what? It's good as it is. Let's keep going. But now you understand what the importance of this particular process is for our business. And yeah, you then don't need to be on every single consultant talking to them every single day about every single process. It's just like the important ones rear their head at certain times throughout the year.
I love it. So obviously there's the retaining of your key people, but then the training and workshopping is important for passing on that knowledge, best practice, and keeping it fresh, and as well as refining it. Could you talk a little about how the learning and development works at your firm?
Yeah. So the guy that runs it has been with us for 10 years.
Awesome.
Done lots of different roles and is extremely well-liked and very good at being able to implement the Fraser Dove operating system.
Great.
We also hire people that are the way that we kind of, the terminology we use is we'd rather have a sponge than a rock. want somebody that can really take on board what we're saying to them. It might take some time, but we really want people that are open to learning new ways of working, understanding the history of success that we've got and the reasons why we think it's good for their career if they start to change some of the ways that they work. Or we've got other people that have never worked before that come and work for us and they just think that this is how you do things.
Excellent.
So it's like, the pathway for excellence and the learning and development is something that we've always got an eye on. We don't always get it right. It is really difficult. What you have to do is just continue to reinforce the same things. That's the only part which I am quite glad that I've kind of passed on to different people in the business to reinforce saying the same things every month or every quarter. Yes. For 10 years could be quite monotonous. But, you have to also think that we've got people here that hadn't worked in the industry a year ago. So yes, they still need the reinforcement of it. So that's the one thing is for good L&D, it is reinforcing the right things more often.
Love it. What are those key messages that you reinforce continuously forever?
Yeah, for me, it's about balance. I think if you want a good career within this industry, you have to keep pushing into the next zone. Okay. So from a, when I say balance, it's like, I feel you need to be good at resourcing. I feel you need to be good at marketing. I feel that you need to be good at project management. You need to be good at business development. You need to be good at account management. Like, those are five good technical skills to be a very good search consultant. You're not going to be great at them all from day one. You have to learn. You have to kind of push yourself out of the comfort zone. You have to, you know, be, have an awareness that you need to learn all of these things if you want to be able to take the next steps. Okay. But what we also have here is, if there is a reticence or like a lack of desire to move into like a sales or client management role, we have a career path that could suit you. So, you know, what we're trying to do here is definitely give people all of the toolkit to be a very good search consultant for the future, future leader within this space. But if the toolkit, if one of the tools doesn't work, it doesn't mean that the other four wouldn't be brilliant. So we can create a different path for them, and they can still have a really high contribution to the business, but it might just not be sales, or it might just not be delivery. So we're just very keen to play to everybody's strengths so that they can have a good career with us.
Let's talk a little more about the right toolkit for success, because that's something that came up in our pre-interview discovery phase. And I was really interested to learn that. And hearing you talk about playing to people's strengths, do you think that's, well, okay, so this is a two-part question. First, I want to know what the toolkit for success is. And you've given part of it by talking about the five kind of key competencies that people need to develop. Do you think that being able to play to people's strengths works in a very small organization, or is it a luxury of now having some critical mass? And the reason I ask that question is, you know, if, for example, you have a split desk model where you've got salespeople and you've got delivery people, and maybe you've got a few people that can do both, and the market dips, which I believe life sciences has had a slowdown in the last year compared to the previous couple of years, that puts pressure on you, because your payroll costs must be high. And if you have people who are, their strength is delivery, and you have less roles to deliver on, and you really need more of a sales effort, then how does that work in a market that's, you know, more challenging, let's say?
Because that's definitely what some of our larger competitors are feeling. That's for sure. I would say that our agility as a 50-person business means that we aren't too delivery orientated. We want to have the right balance of people in that kind of, you know, sales and process role, or 360, whatever you want to call it. We then also have a really good team of the, you know, client services, you know, business development, sales strategy guys. So we've got a good mix. We've got kind of 360, we've got strategic sales, and we've got process management, customer success, and delivery. So at different times, there will be a different need for any of those three sections to be absolutely firing. But if you can have that kind of 360 piece really consistent, then that's when I think you're in a really good spot. Over the past 12 months, there has been it's been a quite tumultuous, turbulent market within life sciences, but that doesn't mean that there isn't opportunity. You just have to work harder to find it.
Yeah.
And life sciences, you know, there is all, we work in some quite technical aspects. It's not all the science. We actually work within quite a lot of manufacturing, production, quality, where drugs still need to be made, just because there's a lack of investment in new biotech, you know, science coming through. That doesn't mean that there aren't companies that are still hiring 20,000 people,
right,
that have got a ginormous diabetes drug that needs to be churned out every day.
Yes.
So for us, it's like ensuring we're in the right markets, identifying the opportunity and taking it at the right time.
Okay, well said. Have you guys seen a decline in revenues this year compared to, or like 2023, 2024 compared to the previous year?
Yes, I would say, I wouldn't say decline, I'd say a plateau.
Okay, that's good.
But we also invested quite heavily in new people at that point, as there was a turbulence in the market, meaning there's a bit of a gap between investment and reality of revenues. Also, it helped us realign the importance of that kind of 360 team that are developing. There shouldn't be too much of a reliance on just delivering searches. We have to be way more strategic on, winning new clients or the right level of customer success within the current clients that we've got. So it was good because you get a real inflection point when times are tough.
Yes.
I'd rather be a good consultant in a tough market than a good consultant in a great market.
What do you mean
And
by that? What can you explain that? Because that sounds counterintuitive.
yeah, I mean, to be a good consultant in a tough market means that you've got to work a lot harder, because there was so many life sciences companies born out of COVID, life
Yes.
sciences recruitment companies. So COVID
Yeah, there
came
seems to
in.
be an explosion of recruiting companies in life sciences.
Yep. And we'd been working in the space for, I mean, I'd been working in the space since 2008, and COVID happened in 2020. So, all of a sudden there was just a big drop of new companies in, and I don't know how a lot of those are doing at the moment. A lot seem to be diversifying into different industries like sustainability or environmental. So, for us, we're very focused on staying within life sciences. But, I would say that the market over the past 12 months has been different because of the lack of investment in, say, biotech and some areas of med tech. We've also had a COVID wave of overhiring turn into a tsunami of redundancies. So you've got, companies with 100,000 employees that are going to cut 30%, which is insane numbers. But then, we're very focused on the kind of companies that we work with. We have a really clear strategy. We work with PE-backed life sciences companies because they're always hiring people at the right time. The PE holds are a little bit longer than they used to be. And then we work with what we call corporate underdogs, which are kind of mid-size organizations that not everybody knows exists or want to work with. Somebody between 500 and 10,000 people with a few manufacturing sites, that is our absolute core company that we work with. And those guys have been extremely resilient through this last 12 months.
I love that you're very definite and strategic about who your ideal client profile is, and I think a lot of firms are not clear on that. They like life sciences is a vast that encompasses so many different areas, right? And you've got that strategy locked in. So it sounds like the 360 search consultants are the bedrock of your business. And then you also there are opportunities for people who want to focus on delivery or selling, but ultimately it's the majority of your fee earners are 360. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, a mix of 360, and then they would also have support from a research team.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So our the data that we have says that, our guys max out at around five searches. So if you have five active searches and you also need to be doing, network development or new client acquisition to get the right balance on a weekly basis, five searches is the maximum that you can handle, really.
Okay.
And we work very much in that leadership zone. So it's like senior director to SVP.
Okay.
So they are, low volume, high complexity searches. But also, part of our business development strategy is everybody is a customer. So they're not candidates or clients. They need to be treated with customer success, because if you're working with a VP of manufacturing as a candidate, they can also obviously be a client.
Definitely.
So we want to leave a good, memorable experience with us, even if they get the job or not, or if they are a hiring manager. It's really a community play, and I think that we have had a lot of success against our competitors with that kind of feeling.
Love it.
But
Okay.
part of my like I don't know, working style is like we try and do everything with purpose. So it's like understanding our customer demographic. Like, we're not going to go and place the next CEO of Johnson & Johnson. That's not us. But what we might do is we might place the next CEO of a mid-size generics company that you and I haven't heard of today. And I've worked in this industry since 2008. But, you know, we might not know as much about them, but that's the kind of organization that we want to work with. And then we want to be able to help them. You know, could we go and help Johnson & Johnson with their online hiring strategy? No, because they probably spend hundreds of millions on that. But another company, a 5,000 person organization in Germany that has no idea how to create key opinion leaders on LinkedIn to work as hiring magnets for when they're looking for candidates, we can actually have that conversation with them and cut through. So it's like, everything with purpose, we know the right people to attract and we know the right people to go after. And then that's just our focus.
Love it. That's really exciting, Tom. I like the way you're thinking on that. Listen, can we talk about something that a lot of firm owners, well, it's a challenge for anybody really, is how to consistently generate your own personal production at a high level while also developing those around you. And I think that's because I'm assuming you're at a stage where you're in a non-billing role, but in the early days, like, you must have had to like still be selling, still be delivering, still be, you know, closing deals. And at the same time as you're hiring, you're training, you're onboarding, it's a lot, right? So how did you deal with all of that?
The 360 analogy, okay, and the unpacking the roles.
Yeah.
I ended up with, say, if you've got 360 degree, I ended up with like 90.
Yep.
I had one specific job, and that was customer success, client management, and new client acquisition.
Okay.
How do you develop others around you whilst also generating revenue? In my opinion, is to show people what to do.
Can you say so?
Yeah, so I would be, we're a connected business, so we've got a lot of people working in the office. And especially in those first 5 years, you know, 2013 to 2018, there wasn't as much home working and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of people in the office, and I was just flat out all the time growing the business. The only way that I knew how to grow the business was to get in the market and to create opportunity to win more search projects. We'd then be winning those projects. I would then be handing over the project management and research to those consultants that are developing. And then it would get to a point where they would be doing such a great job, I'd be able to join like a weekly progress call with the client. 15 minutes before the call, I'm saying, cool, what's the memo? What do I need to know? What are we going to go and talk about? And I'd be able to question it, quiz. I'd say, perfect, this is what you're going to talk about. And then we'd go in together. And when I talk about those 10 generals or 12 generals that we've got in the business now that are still showing best in class and showing people how to do it, they're kind of taking the learnings from what I've given those guys, and then they're teaching the next generation. So developing others around you, we feel, is done by doing the job still, mm-hmm, or showing people how to do it and inspiring to them to do it.
Okay.
And then you're hopefully inspired in equal measure by what you're seeing on that kind of daily basis from the team that you've got in the organization.
I love it. So can we break this down a little more detail, Tom? So it sounds like from day one, you were developing new business was a major focus for you, right? That's something you're good at, that you enjoy. And then, and I guess Joe was focusing on the delivery. So you were a partnership from the beginning. You were winning the work. He was fulfilling, yep, the work. And then how do you go from there? And I completely agree with showing, like, leading by example, showing people, like, doing it. They're seeing you do it, and then you're seeing them do it. You're showing them, and then they're stepping up. But could you, like, just break that down a little more granular detail of, you know, getting to a point where people are able to step into that role where they're basically taking over large parts of what you're doing.
Yeah. And a lot of it came from kind of the delivery and process management, mm-hmm. okay, but then also the management of the network or the candidate community that they'd be speaking with. So say the first 3 years of the business, we worked in skill sets that were like procurement and supply chain, manufacturing and operations, and quality, right? So they're kind of linked. There's a bit like make it and move it. That's the kind of terminology that you'd hear. Mm-hmm. So we'd have somebody that would be able to come in over that first 12 months, work with lots of manufacturing and operations candidates, helping us to complete searches, giving them a good process, excellence, good candidate experience. But then also they're in that consultants network. So we would then have a lot of value add conversations with these candidates, tell them about what's happening in the market, talk to them about what opportunities are out there, but also talk to them about what talent they could hire themselves if they worked with us.
Mm.
All of a sudden, you're just asking simple questions. You're sticking to kind of a business development blueprint is what we call it. Mm-hmm. And we're able to take those research consultants into search consultants by then saying, okay, what we need you to do now is not just source candidates, but you need to source clients. Mm-hmm. So go and speak to all of that network, ask a series of questions, try and understand their problems, and then we'll see if we've got a solution or a service that can help solve the problem that they've got. So then it was like just gradual. If you've built the network and you've built the market and they know, like, and trust you, they've also had a good experience being a candidate, or, you know, they understand the type of process that we run, we're really well referred. So like one of our OKRs is, I've got it on the rule here, is to be, we want to be the best and most referred search firm in the industry. So that is like a real part of our way of working. You know, we would rather work with one company 50 times than 50 companies once. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, we're just very focused on being able to give people good career development opportunities here, but also within the network that they've created. They're not trying to find something new all the time. What they're actually trying to do is monetize the network that they've created.
This is brilliant, Tom. So the business development blueprint, it sounds like the key to success there and the path for someone to move from a candidate into a full search consultant role is they're essentially turning their candidate relationships into client relationships. Did I understand that correctly? Which makes sense. And you gave a clue earlier about, you said like you ended up basically doing 90% of the role. Do you see it breaking down into 90 degree segments and in like, how would you identify those other 90 degrees?
Yeah, I mean, it does a little bit. So you've got kind of like source or research.
Yeah.
You've then got engage and assessment and qualification. You know, that is a big part of our role. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the process and project management, including offer, a close, brokering. Mm-hmm. And then you've got kind of account management. And then you've got the new client business development, client acquisition. So some people are better at some aspects of that than others.
Yeah.
You know, we've got really good history of being able to create people that are good at all of those things, okay? But then they may not want to be a manager, as an example. Mm-hmm. They may not want to manage people. So we say, okay, right, one of the roles that you could do in our business encapsulates all the things that you're good at. You need to have a portfolio of 10 customers and you get to kind of grow your revenue from that group. We've got others that are like, you know, Tom, I really don't enjoy the process piece. I don't like the sourcing. I don't really like the assessment and the qualification, but I love the problem solving with my network. Mm. I know that there is a gap in talent in, I don't know, business development in a certain part of the outsourcing industry. And I know that I can go and speak to people and win search projects that then others can deliver in the business. So it's like, we're trying to connect it all, that kind of 360 piece. The way that we have actually now created our career pathway is we've got like different roles that you could take. You can go into client services if you're very good at the business development and client management piece, but you don't want to run the process. We've got territory leadership, which is like if you want to go and open a new office for us in a new location. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's somebody that's like full of energy, ambition, and like laissez-faire, wants to just go for it. We've then got like head of research and delivery, which is somebody that is absolutely focused on customer success and ensuring that our searches are delivered on time, in full, every time. Okay, we've then got management, which is like, managing of our practices, managing of search consultants. And then we've got kind of more of an operational role. So like if you want to move into the business, and those roles can either be in marketing, in finance, in operations, but it might be somebody or learning and development, but it might be somebody that doesn't want to work in the recruitment business anymore, but still have a lot of value to add for the rest of the business.
Mm.
So we're trying to give people those pathways and express them so people kind of feel more confident that they can really step forward in the business and have a really, you know, engaging and quality career with us.
Love that. Tom, you mentioned OKRs earlier, and most people in recruiting talk about KPIs. Could you say a little more about what OKRs are and how you guys use them within the business?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there is definitely a world for both. I think that having some kind of key performance indicator on the nuts and bolts of the daily business is definitely necessary. OKRs are more, for me, on a visionary sense, to set some more audacious goals that then we're working to over a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we want to, I can read these out to you, the kind of four that we've got. We've got one which focuses on productivity and capability. So we want to create the commercial edge, thriving for it, continuous improvement and measuring what matters. Okay, so that's kind of the feeling of it. But what that's all about is like having more of a commercially savvy executive search business rather than one that is just focused in research. The other one that we got is customer success. We want to be the most and best referred search firm in the industry. So that means like high levels of customer success, ensuring that we do what we say and we do it with enough style and panache that people want to continue to work with us. You know, sales and growth is all about creating and taking opportunity and growing, you know, revenue per quarter over the next 20 quarters. And then speed to effectiveness. So we want the industry's best emerging talent on the rocket, as we call it, and making a bigger impact faster. So we have that as one of our OKRs. So people really lean into being promoted, or when they join us and they're coming from maybe a different recruitment background, they know that one of our OKRs is speed to effectiveness. So they've got to get up to speed quickly. It is harder, but the rewards are much greater once they are doing things in the way that we think are the right way to do them.
Okay, this is really cool. It's interesting. I've done this over 200 times, Tom, and nobody has ever mentioned OKRs before. So, and it's not something I've explored much myself. I've read into it a little bit. How do you go from the OKR to the actual day-to-day, you know, what's going on in the business? Because it sounds sort of like you've got these key results that you're trying to achieve within the business. And they're, how do you move towards them? I guess that's
it, yeah. It is quite difficult. It is quite difficult and can be quite overwhelming. Okay, so you've got to be careful with the amount of information that you're giving to certain people throughout the organization. So within the kind of terminology of our OKRs is creating velocity. That's what we want to do.
Okay.
Coming out of a turbulent market, we want to create velocity as the market comes back. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the kind of the vision for it. But there will probably be five or six people out of the group at the moment that have got very strategic, smart objectives that they're trying to hit on a monthly basis. These are changing every quarter, but they then manage their teams to deliver the key results. So the key results could be anything from like, I don't know, taking productivity or what we report on our KPIs from 70% to 80%. Mm-hmm. So how do we do that? What have we got to do? Well, we need to have the right culture. We need people that really want to do it and not feel that they're kind of being beaten up to hit KPIs. It's like work with the management team to create the right culture so that people start to, you know, move forward and take on more responsibility and become more productive. Mm-hmm. Or it might be that we want to be the most referred search firm. So we ensure that everybody is asking on every single meeting or call that we have, who else should I speak to?
Yes.
So we just implement that as a nice objective or task to be completed. And then we report back on that in 4 to 8 weeks' time, however long it might be.
Mm.
And then what we'll see is over time, these will all have an incremental effect on us being the best and most referred search firm in our space. Right. So it's not easy. And actually, it's kind of landed with a thud or a crunch a couple of times where it's really complex.
Yeah, because you're trying to take something that is strategic and then make it tactical, right?
Yes.
Because the tactics then lead to achieving the overall strategy. And it's interesting. So how often are the OKRs talked about and with who? Like, does it come into people's monthly business review at a search consultant level, or is it more the annual and quarterly planning and the strategic plan for the leadership team?
Yeah, it's more leadership team, but we launched it to the entire business.
Okay.
Okay, and said, like, this is what the leadership team is up to. We call it the cabinet.
Okay.
So we've got like a cabinet of people that we're all focused on these things. And at times it's like, I can't quite understand. I can see people in the leadership team like, I can't quite understand why we're trying to do this. It's like, you will get it, and it will make sense over this period of time, but right now it might not. Just keep stepping forwards, undertake or like eating up those milestones, undertaking those tasks, and then we'll start to see the difference that it's making for the rest of the business. So it's almost like trying to connect strategy with tactical day work.
Yes.
In between all of that is objectives and tasks and key results. But the way that OKRs help is that you can segment different things in the business that are all really important. So rather than it just being one big thing, it's actually like, oh yes, I am doing that. I am working on my L&D more often because of speed to effectiveness.
Great.
So it's just like being able to segment what is quite a complex business into some smaller bite-sized chunks has worked for us from OKRs. What we will now see, I think, moving forwards is there'll probably be a team of 7 or 8 people that are really responsible for making those happen. Mm-hmm. And then as the business grows, that 7 or 8 will turn into, you know, then their subordinates. So it'll probably be a team of 20 people within the next 3 years that will be really, really focused on ensuring the OKRs are completed on a monthly basis.
All right. Awesome. That's really interesting. Tom, what would you say has been a misstep or a mistake or setback in the trajectory, over the last 10, 11 years that, you know, you was a learning opportunity?
Learning opportunity. You said earlier something about learning from hiring the right people.
Yeah.
I've also, on the other side of the coin, we've learned from hiring the wrong people. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's also part and parcel of it. Not every business is a match made in heaven for employer and person that comes and works for them. But I would say that what we've learned is the biggest challenges that we ever have are when expectations aren't set, then expectations aren't met. Mm-hmm. in my thought process, and also communication. You have to kind of treat every day as though it's the first day of the business.
Mm.
And still be, even if times are tough, or if you're having a tough time at home, or if, you know, if things are out of your control and they're stressing you out a bit, you know, as the leader of the business, you have to still be positive. You still need to communicate. You still need to be, you know, communicate the same things sometimes over and over and over. But without the communication, that's when doubt can slip in, or people lose track of the vision, or, you know, it's just consistent clarity in communication. When you don't have those things, that's sometimes when you have some cultural mismatch or cultural challenges within the business, I think.
It's interesting. Do you know Greg Savage?
I've never actually seen, I've been recommended him a couple of times, but I've never seen him.
Okay. So Greg talks about the fact that basically you cannot over-communicate as a leader within a recruiting business, that it might feel to you as if you've said the same thing over and over, but, you know, the communication is better to have more than less, basically. And, you know, but I like what you're saying, treat every day as if it's the first day in your business. What does that mean? What does that look like? You, apart from, you know, remembering to stay positive, you know, keep reinforcing those key messages. What else does that mean to you?
Yeah, but it's like, you know, you might have somebody that's been in the business for 6 months or 2 years and that hasn't heard something that you think everybody should know.
Right.
That really is the beating heart of your business.
Yeah.
And it's just that you haven't said it for a while.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's not part of the daily communication style anymore.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, that's been a bit of a learning. And, you know, after 10 years, you do get a little bit tired of it sometimes. You've got to be honest with yourself. But, you know, it's just like having that in your mind that you have to continue to reinforce it. You know, we are currently going through on this Creating Velocity OKRs new business plan for the next 3 years, where we've seen some opportunity that we're now going to go and take. Mm-hmm. But it was great for Joe and I to think about it, because we're like, wow, we can actually now go back to the business and say, look, we've done all of these things that we said we were going to do, and we have probably dropped the ball by not communicating how great that is. But now what we want to do is show you what's going to happen over the next 12 to 20 quarters, and that we're all going to be part of this seismic growth and, you know, once in a recruitment lifetime opportunity. But we need to consistently communicate it. So we're like in our town halls, or we call them mission control meetings, on a monthly. You just got to be more consistent. You got to just say the same thing, because there's always going to be new people on those calls that have never heard that message before.
I love how you've developed your own language within the business. You've got your cabinet, you've got your mission control meetings, you have your, you know, philosophy. What was the
Creating
one?
Velocity.
Yep. Exactly. Like, it's almost like your, but what's cool is that actually becomes part of the culture, and it's a shared language that everybody has these concepts that are, you know, they have in common, and they're unique to your business. I think that's cool. I like it.
Yeah. And again, you know, the challenge is for me, you know, I have a lot of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I look into the future way more than I ever look into the past. Mm-hmm. And it's about being able to temper my own enthusiasm for change, because mm-hmm. change, you know, isn't always easy to implement.
Yes.
And you have to have the right integrators, as we spoke about earlier with Rocket Fuel. You have to have the right integrators that can either say, great idea, but not now, Tom. Keep that incubated. Keep that going. Or, yep, now's the time. Let's try and launch this into the business. Because without those integrators, what we have had in this business, and what this is one of the challenges I was going to bring up, was that when you try and implement too much and not everything lands, sometimes the people can be like, oh, here comes another thing.
Right.
What's this about?
Exactly.
So you just got to try and make sure that's been a good learning from me, is like, not everybody's on the same wavelength, and that is fine. But, you know, implement the right ideas at the right time, get the right buy-in, and you're got a higher level of, you know, implementation possibility is what we've definitely found.
Awesome. That makes total sense. And I agree. I am the person who has a million ideas. And so the risk is people go, okay, what is it this time? Mark's latest idea, right? And there's almost a little, and luckily not with my team, I've got the right people around me who are like 100% bought in and on board. But I can see people could start getting a little bit skeptical because not all the ideas are going to work, right?
And no.
Like, and they're like, okay, well, the last one didn't work, so I'm going to reserve judgment on what, you know, and hold back a little bit to see how this plays out. And we don't want that. We want people all in, right? And rowing in the same direction.
But what I also quite like is when you have that style, like I have that style. I really like moving around the recruitment Rubik's cube. Like that's yeah. constantly, I feel the best thinking of 5 years ago, you know, is 5 years out of date. You know, I think that we should always be pushing for evolution.
Yeah.
You know, the market is demanding something different and we need to always be at the front of that wave. Okay. But also there are some traditional stuff that should never leave this industry that sure. you should just be doing all day, every day. So for every, you know, recruitment industry 4.0,
yes.
there is also stuff that has been working for the last 25 years that exactly. will continue to for the next 25.
Like, who else should I be speaking to?
Yes.
That's never going to change, question. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, you have three kids. I have three kids. What ages are yours?
So I've got Delilah, who's 8, Wilfred, who's 6, and uh-oh. Otis, who's 4.
Oh, fantastic. Mine are all teenagers at this stage. So mine are 19, 16, 14. But yeah, it's keeps you on your toes.
Keeps you on your toes, yeah. And yeah, it's the visibility that I've now had on the life sciences industry. I'm like chatting to them when they go to bed and going, are you sure you don't want to be a site head? Do you want to be a site head in New Jersey or something like that? I know you hilarious. Want to be a football player, but could you be a head of quality? Is that okay?
Hilarious. Tom, this has been fun. Thanks very much for doing this.
Perfect. Yeah, really enjoyed it. Thank you, Mark.
All right. Have an awesome day. I'll look forward to catching up again sometime soon.
Cheers. Thank you.